podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine, straight from Norway.
And I'm Adam. Welcome to the 26th episode of Robots, where we'll be interviewing the protagonists of the new Robots theater play, which has received wide media attention in the past weeks. Our first guest, Christian Denizard, is the brain behind this 10-year project that mixes human and robotic actors.
Our second guest, Nicolas Tomatis, is the CEO of Bluebotics, the company who gave birth to the three robots on stage.
You went to see the play, right?
It was excellent. But let's talk with Christian and Nicolas before I give you my own personal opinion about the show. And first, as always, let's hear the latest news in robotics from Christine.
Thanks, Sabine. Japan's Kawada Industries and General Robotics have teamed up to develop a human interactive robot, or HIRO. The robot is designed to conduct research on how humans and robots can work side by side, which Kawada believes will be a key element for the next generation of robots. HIRO looks surprisingly similar to Johnny Five from the movie Short Circuit. It stands about 1.6 meters tall, has two stereo cameras as a head, and a broad-shouldered torso with two robotic arms. Unlike Johnny Five, however, its body is covered in what Kawada refers to as a robotic suit, out of highly flexible material which both hides the robot's mechanics from view and cushions inadvertent collisions with the human collaborators. The HIRO will be sold to research institutions for about 57,000 euros or 77,000 US dollars. In a different bid on studying human-robot interaction, scientists at the Technical University of Munich have developed a mobile robot that interacts with pedestrians to find its way through a city. The robot, called ACE for Autonomous City Explorer, lacks an inbuilt map or GPS system. Instead, like a lost human in a similar situation, it will stop passerbys and ask them for directions. It then uses posture recognition software to understand the direction in which a person is pointing and continues on its way. In a first test, researchers dumped ACE outside the university and instructed it to find its way to the Marienplatz in the center of Munich, some 1.5 kilometers away. 38 helpful pedestrians and 5 hours later, ACE had reached its destination. While this may seem slow, the researchers comment that the robot advanced rapidly until it reached Munich's pedestrian zone, where its popularity proved an unexpected obstacle to rapid progress. Researchers around Metzin City at Carnegie Mellon University in the US have demonstrated a new way to control micro-robots using a combination of magnets and electrostatic traps. In a demonstration, three robots, only 200 microns wide, or less than a human's hair's width, move around a glass surface. Individual robots can be anchored to this surface using an embedded grid of metal electrodes, which allowed the researchers to individually push microspheres in a miniature version of a robotic soccer game. With further development, the researchers hope that this new technology will help pave the way for the use of micro-robots in more accurate drug delivery to tumor cells or allow researchers to fabricate electronic components more easily. As always, you can find more information on this week's news, including pictures of the HIRO, a video of ACE traveling the city of Munich, and a video of Metzin City's micro-robots playing a micro-soccer game on our forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Thanks, Christine. Christian Denizard is the director and initiator of Robots, not the podcast, but the play, that just finished a 3-week run in Servion, just outside of Lausanne, Switzerland. Denizard tells us about the inspiration he had for the show, and why he chose robots as actors, and what he hopes that people will take away from his piece. We'll also hear about his plans on showing the play outside of Switzerland.
Hi, Christian. Welcome to the Robots Podcast.
Hi, thank you.
Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
I'm a director of a play which is called Robot. And Robot is a play with two human, one girl and one man, and three machines.
So, like you said, you're director of this play called Robots. Mm-hmm. Tell us maybe about the story first. What is Robots about?
The story was about a man which live alone with three robots around him and nobody else, because he is afraid of his the other people. But he's in love with a girl, and he invites a girl to come in his house, and he prepared the rendezvous. He programmed the rendezvous as he programmed a robot, that as we did when we were young. I mean, you have the girl who come in your house, so you say, well, I'm gonna put that music, I'm gonna offer her that drink, and I'm gonna take her hand at this moment, so she will love me. It's obvious, but it never worked. Because it's not a robot, and it never worked. Also, because you are not a robot. I mean, maybe when you think about your rendezvous, you think about you suppose that you're full of confidence, but in fact, when she comes, you feel a little boy, like a very little boy. And so that's what happened to him. He programmed the robot, she came, she didn't do what he expected, and he didn't do what he expected, and the robot don't understand anything, so the rendezvous is a fail. And it's very funny part of the play. So the next day, he's very sad. He's alone, and he start to work on his third robot, which is the dancer girl, which is a robot, very humanoid robot. Which look really like the girl, and he begin to make the same rendezvous, but only with robot, and it works, of course, at first, because this is robot, so no, there is no problem. But the question is, okay, it worked, but he's alone, so that's the question of the play. I mean, what do we expect from technology? I just ask the question. I'm not a moralist. I mean, everybody has his own answer. But I think that it's the fact that you feel more and more alone with new technology is something very frightening for me, because I saw it around me every day. I know people who use it without any problem, but I know people who use, for example, Facebook, and who does it, and who forget to live a real life around it. So this is a metaphor of that fact, and I think we have to ask that question.
It's interesting you should say that, because actually, in Japan right now, there's more and more people that are older and there's not enough children to take their place and to take care of them. And one of the solutions they're looking at is building companion robots for older people. And that's that goes along the lines of what you're saying, having robots is not a real life, but maybe it's better than not having anything.
I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake to try that. I think that it costs a lot of money, and this money should go to other research. I think research about I mean not research. I mean socialization. You know, in Japan, this is an example. In Japan, we went in Japan 4 years ago with that project to speak about it, to discuss to the possibility to go in Japan, and they said that we have to play that play in Japan because this start to be one of the biggest problem in Japan. So they know it, that it's a problem too. It's very appealing to think that with a technology you can have a friend or somebody to take care of your grandfather. But in fact, I don't think it's possible. I mean, we are mammals and we need contact, and we need heals, we need and we need a response, you know. I heard that if you in Japan, actually, if you send 1,800 dollars, some pictures of your face and a record of your voice, in 2 weeks you can have a little robot which with your parents, and I thought, oh well, it's cool, you can have a robot in 2 weeks which move a little bit. I thought it's it was cool. But then they said, so you offer that to your grandfather in the hospital, and you don't have to come back anymore. This is a mistake, I think. This is dangerous. Because I don't think that your grandfather need that. He need you. And if somebody is alone, really alone, I prefer to offer him an animal, a cat or a dog. But some people said, well, but a cat or a dog, you have to take care of it. And I think that's the important thing, to take care of something or somebody. That's what we need. It's the this is the base of a relationship. So I don't think that it's a good way. Technology is fantastic to have fun, to have a washing machine. There is a lot of things that technology can do that I love, and also robots. I mean, the new metro in Lausanne is a robot, and I love it. But I don't think that it have to come in our private life. It's dangerous.
Let's maybe get back to speaking about the play.
Yeah.
Since we're digressing a bit, tell us how is it for the actors, and how is it for you as a director to use robots? Would you consider it maybe a fancy stage prop, or is it really an actual character?
We consider the robot as character. The difficulties was the robot give the rhythm. I mean, the robot have their rhythm, and you cannot fight against it. So usually we work on a scene. For example, I was I was one of the robots. We prepared the scene. Then we programmed the robot. Then we redo the scene, and we have to change everything because the robot has his own rhythm, and because the robot give some new. When you see a robot acting, that gives you some new idea. So new ideas, and we made a lot of back and forth. And for the actors, the real actors, it was very difficult because they have no, they had nobody in front of them. In fact, they have object. When you act in front of when you act with another actors, there is a lot of signs on his face, on his body, which give you answers. You don't act alone. You never act alone. But in that case, they had to act alone. There is a lot of scene where Branch Worsham, which is the man of the play, he had a lot of scene with three robots. So you have four characters on stage, and the public forget that he was in fact alone, and he had to give life to the robot because the robots alone are not very alive. In fact, they don't give life effect. It was the way that the actor play with the robot would give life to the robot. So you have to play for two people, you and the machine. I think it's for a movie actor. In the movie, when you have to play with green screen, I think you have the same problem. You have to feel things or to give impression without anything. You have just your imagination. It's a little bit like that.
So tell us perhaps not only how you acted with the robots, but how did you program the robots to do what you wanted them to do? Without having to sit down and write thousands of lines of code.
No, that's it. It was important because we asked Blue Boutique to have a program that everybody could use, even if you are not an engineer. So they made a program very intuitive program, and you have a map. You put some points, and you ask the robot to move from one point to another one. This is for the movement, and you have also a very simple program to program the other movement. I mean, the head movement, the arm movement, or something like that. This is very easy to learn to use, but then it's each movement you have to program it. So for I think we have thousands of lines of program, but. This is not code. This is really like to make a very complicated music song, for example. So and then we have people who did that. He was that was his. That was his work to program a robot and to take care of robot during the play. So he was like a puppet master with three puppets. And the question was, is it interesting that the robot has a kind of independence? I mean, for example, the robots are able to if there is an object or somebody on their trajectories, they can avoid the problem. So for us, the question was, is it interesting to use that? I mean, to not to have the same play every night. And in fact, the more we worked, the more the play is stable, because it's first very difficult to have something stable, you know. Then maybe we will try other things. But this is, you know, if you have there is always a little possibility of error, and if there is an addition of that possibility, sometimes the robot stop. But we learn how to restart the robot without to go on stage, and I think that the audience didn't see anything in general. So it was in fact it works. I mean, you can do a play with robots. That's something important, and the play is 1.5 hour. It's a long time. I think it works technically. It works artistically. I think it works because the you forget the technique. You forget the technology 5 minutes after the beginning of the show, and you start to follow the story. So I think artistically it worked. There are characters, and the show works because a lot of people came. So we are happy.
The show is really great, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners would like to go see it. Do you have any plans to show it anywhere outside of Switzerland?
We receive a lot of requests, and the play is without a word, so there is no problem of language or so I think that we will show it in a lot of part of the world. I hope so.
Great. So as a last question, what do you hope the audience takes away from your show when they come and see it?
I want to give to the audience the poetry of the machines, and the poetry of the unknown. I mean, to go to somewhere that you don't know. It's very important. I think in art, this is a lonely thing to do, to go where nobody goes. And also to give a good story, and to come back home with a lot of questions.
Great. Well, Christian, thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you on the show. And I wish you all the success with your show.
Thank you very much.
Nicolas Tomatis is the CEO of the spin-off company from the EPFL, Bluebotics. They're specialized in making service robots, capable of, for example, guiding you around an exhibition or bringing you an espresso while you're working hard at your desk. The core of their robots is a navigation system which allows them to map their environment and then smoothly move around. Their recent collaboration with a design school, automaton artist François Junot, and theater director Christian Denizard, which Adam just interviewed, has given rise to 3 robot actors. First, a distinguished butler, second, an obedient dog, and third, a sensual robotic woman. Hi, Nicola. Welcome to Robots.
Hello.
Can you please present yourself to our listeners?
Yes. So my name is Nicola Tomatis, and I'm working for the company Bluebotics, which is a small startup in Lausanne.
What is Bluebotics?
Bluebotics is a company active in robotics, and more precisely in mobile robotics. And our vision is to become leader in the autonomous navigation technology, which means that we really concentrate on navigation.
Can you briefly tell us what type of robots you've been developing and what they're used for?
We mainly work on two different segments. One is a more classical one, which is AGVs, automated guided vehicles. And in this field, we really, only deliver the navigation system for vehicles already existing on the market. And on the other side, we, like many other people, hope that the service robotics revolution, I don't know, will really come. And so we are active in this field by working with partners and creating new application.
Can you maybe give us a concrete example of some of the work you've done and the navigation which was needed for that?
Yes. So our strategy being to find partners and creating new applications, we have two good examples of that. We worked for the company Nespresso, which hopefully you know, and they asked us already several years ago to build up with them a kind of mobile coffee machine that brings you the coffee instead of you taking the coffee. That's one of the good examples. And the second one, we have developed with the company Autobock in Germany, it's a rehabilitation company, a wheelchair which is completely autonomous for those people that even have problems in using a joystick.
So today we'll be concentrating on one of three of the robots you've created for the Robot Human Theater, which has been playing for the last 2 weeks in Switzerland. So first of all, maybe how did Bluebotics come to be involved in the robots play?
To be honest, I don't know exactly how it happens, but what I know is that with the project, the Nespresso one, we worked with the brother of Christian Denizar. So probably I assume that this, by discussing the two brothers together, that they got the idea to contact us and to make this project. But I mean us, to be honest, they first contacted EPFL, then EPFL has done the conceptual work, and then we worked for them to build up the robots.
So Christian Denizar is the director of this play. What did he ask you for when he came here?
I mean, some work was already done. All the conceptual work was done, and they really come here with a specification on what the robot was supposed to do, every one of these three robots. So the idea is that they were coming with already also a design concept, aesthetical design, and functionality, and our goal has been to build up this functionality with this aesthetical design.
Okay, let's go more into detail into these three robots. Maybe you can present them to us and tell us really visually what they look like and what are their sensors and actuators.
I'll try. So all three share the same base that allows the robot to move around. They use, again, our navigation system, which is based on laser. So we have two motors, differential drive, and we have a laser-based navigation system. And then, starting from these three bases, we have three different, completely different characters of robots. One is Igor the Butler, which is a butler. And this robot has an arm, a 5-degree of freedom arm that we have developed in the past for this kind of application, man-machine interaction and so on. And also a head that can pan and with a light that is like the eyes. And then we have Bruno the dog, which is a small one with a pan tilt used for the head. And finally we have Leila, which is a combination of, high-tech robotics and the classical old automatons. So we have done the base, and then on top of it we have really a kind of girl body, which is designed like an automaton and is used for dancing and for being more, artistic.
So with respect to the artistics, who designed really the visual aspect of the robots?
So this is an important question. So we know we are engineers, most of us, and we know that you never have to ask engineers to do aesthetical design. The first thing to learn is that. So for this project, we work with the ECAL, École Cantonale d'Art de Lausanne. And since this project, we have other collaboration with them because they are very good in industrial design, and they could really, I think, build up, in my opinion, one of the best robots we ever had from an aesthetical point of view.
And how do you make a robot act? What are the tasks that it had to do on scene?
This has been something special for this project. Normally what we do is that we have our robots dynamically reacting to the environment. And in this case, of course, it's another task because the robot has really to play its role in the theater play. And so we had to give the artists the opportunity to program these robots, and these robots have to do always the same thing, not to interact too much. So our main development has been to one side adapt a navigation system for this task, but on the other side really to develop the tools that allows the artists to program every single movement of the robots.
So you speak a lot of this navigation system. Maybe you can go more into detail as to how this works and basically what is this navigation system?
If we want to go into details, then I have to start using bad words coming from technology. So again, this I already told you, but we use lasers mainly for navigation, and we okay, let's go a step backwards. Navigation is the ability of a machine to know where it is, where it has to go, and how to get there. So knowing where it is, we use the laser, and we measure the shape of the environment, and we have a map, and with that we can then update the position of the robot. Planning, we define a kind of graph which defines where the robot is supposed to move from one point to the other, and with this we have global planning, and we can then come to the goal. And locally, but this was limited in this application, we have a kind of obstacle avoidance system which ensures that in the graph between three nodes, you are sure that you can reach the goal on one side, and you make sure that the system is safe.
And when you say that the actors are able to program the robots, do you mean they program where they should go in the environment?
But not only this. They program also how the head has to move, when the light has to be switched on, how the arm moves, each degree of freedoms, what do we have? The body of the dancer, how it moves. This is a special case because being an automaton with one degree of freedom will do a lot of things. But so you can really program every degree of freedoms. And the idea that we took for working with them is to be based on typical, I don't know if you say that, MIDI programs for music. So it's kind of, you have for every note, or in our case, one note is a degree of freedom, you have one line, and then you define when you do what and which parameters.
So basically you provided a tool for these actors, and the actors really build up the entire play themselves using these tools.
Absolutely. No, but yes, but we had a chance, both we and the theater association, is that one guy working for them is an engineer who works 50% for as an actor and 50% as an engineer. So he has both knowledge. He has the, let's say, finesse of artists, and he has the knowledge of engineers. So he is the guy bridging the technology to the artistic world. But this is done also with these tools that allows to program the robots. The tools have been used also by Christian himself and other people, but now it was perfect to have this guy working for the whole theater play.
Yeah, I guess I imagine that's really the central point, to have someone who's able to do both the acting and the engineering and being part of the entire project from the start.
Absolutely. Not from the start, from the start of this last phase, but absolutely. For us, it has been one of the big experiences, try to just only to communicate between artists and engineers. At the beginning, we had problems in understanding each other. So it's a learning process. And then you really have other requirements in respect to ergonomy, respect to how to program, what they know, what they can understand, and what they want to do. Our assistant, Valerie, was telling me that she was at the theater play and she never saw our robots behaving like this in a positive sense, which means that they really can give much more in terms of visual results than what we are able to do, and that's exactly this interaction between artists and engineers.
So this is maybe one of the challenges or strong points. What are the other challenges in making robots for the theater?
Of course, one challenge that we had was that the requirements were quite precise, which means that we really had to build three custom designed robots. At the beginning, in a short time, but at the end, this one, you should know, is the third trial to bring this theater play really to the theater. So at the beginning, we had to do that in 4 months, then it has been stopped for several years and so on and so on. But the challenge was customization, try to reduce cost, time for delivery, And again, what I told you before, really giving the possibility to artists to program these robots.
You said the actors are able to program these robots. Is everything predetermined in what the robots do, or is there some degree of dynamic autonomy?
The robots still do obstacle avoidance, which means that if something goes wrong, they will avoid obstacles and collisions. But they are programmed, theoretically they should not do that. If they do that, is that there is a problem. So I would say that besides problems by humans or by the environment or bugs in the robots, they should always do the same.
Speaking of problems, do you have any anecdotes of anything which happened in the last 2 weeks?
Oh, probably a lot, but the last one was, let's say, funny, but now it's funny because the problem is solved. But it seems that the dancer had back problems, so the back was not moving anymore, and we had to change the amplifier, so the controller for this movement, and we just noticed that there were some pieces of metal in the amplifier that were probably doing some shortcuts, and so the system was not working for that. And this, of course, after 4 months of using every day, and after 1 week where everything was okay, even in the theater, this happened, and it was on Friday, and Pierre had to run to correct that on Friday afternoon for the play in the evening. But at the end, everything worked out fine.
If you had to imagine a robot for the theater in the future, what perhaps would you look into?
I mean... Even if I'm not an artist, I would say for me, it's not the robot is not the goal. The robot is the mean. And if you go see this theater play, you will see it's exactly that. So the theater play is not about robots. It's about human that has less interaction with other humans. It's getting more alone and more. And so for me, the robot has to remain a mean. And in this sense, I cannot tell you. It depends who is coming with which story, and then depending on the story and how they want to build up this story with robots, we will have to adapt ourselves to build up the correct solution for this kind of play.
I would love to see a robot which improvises. Could you imagine that?
Yes, probably in the podcast you talk often with people from in artificial intelligence and bio-inspired system, so I will say something that will create a lot of reaction probably. In my opinion, if the robots make something that you do not expect, is that there is an error. The robot should be programmed to do what you expect. If it does not something else, then something went wrong. So I would say no, or maybe I can say yes, because now I'm more in the business, so I don't remember exactly how it works, so it can still surprise me. But no, from a programming point of view, if it is not behaving like planned, then there is a problem.
Thanks, Nicolas, for being here with us on Robots.
Thanks to you.
So, Sabine, what do you think?
Well, Adam, I was amazed by robots. The play had me laughing, worried, and almost crying without any words, sort of like Wall-E, basically. To get a non-geek opinion, I even brought a chemist with me, and he was also conquered. Why? Well, first of all, the scenery. It's a strange two-story house with a mad scientist lab. The doors and the lighting is controlled by some multi-LED buttons. And there's an elevator for the wheeled robot servant, a gadget which helps the guy put on his coat, and finally there's a smart spotlight which seems to obey the actor's desires, pretty much like everything else in the play. Then, all around the scene, built in the theater walls, there was an org that could play on its own and autonomous percussions, so it was sort of like having a mystical band glued to the wall, and the music throughout the play was really great. But I guess you're all interested by the robots. Well, I can't believe how precise they were. No wrong moves, they were smooth, they could move around in this really, really cluttered environment, as if it was an open warehouse. The funny thing is that I'm so used to robots not being perfect that every time the LEDs on the robots would shut off, I would think, oh no, the robot's not working anymore. But I guess I was wrong, and it's possible to have robots running around for 90 minutes without making any errors. Don't get me wrong, I know that all the moves were predetermined, but no one in the room was thinking about that. You end up just seeing a real dog, basically, and a butler, and not a robot. Except that they obey their human master's every request. And what makes these robots seem more lifelike? Well, they do things like they light a candle to see in the dark. Or, for example, the female, and this was really the best. At one point, you look at this robotic female chest, and she's breathing. Her chest is going up. And so really, you just can't help it. You end up breathing at the same rhythm as the robot, because you really catch on to, she looks sort of human. And of course, well, you pity this man, this actor, he's only able to show his love if really a predefined sequence of courtship is executed in perfect order. But I guess you can't really blame him, because this female robot is so perfect and the relationship is so easy that, well, I can understand how he went into that easy pathway. Anyhow, as Nicholas says, it's not about the robots, it's about the humans. And the actors were bluffing. They had to be every bit as precise as the robots. They even danced with them at some point. So really, the actors, beautiful mimes and beautiful acting. So I won't tell you the end, but the show will be traveling, and I hope you'll all get a chance to see it.
That's it for this episode of Robots. For more information on our guests, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. And of course, don't forget to stop by the forum for discussion on today's show and other hot topics in robotics.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Act with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.